This is The Root Cellar on Pioneer 90.1, where regional history and family folklore come together with your hosts, Jim and Jan Stranley.
The topic for today's Root Cellar is making maple syrup. Why choose such a topic? Well, for many years, my son requested my assistance to help him make maple syrup at his home in Marquette, Michigan. They live on 8 acres of land outside the city, and his land bears many different maple trees. Some time ago, he started making maple syrup, and he wanted me to come over to help him. Well, there was one excuse after another every year for not coming because of my schedule, and even retired, I never could find the time to go. This year, I vowed to make the trip regardless of my conflicts and was very happy for doing so. Let me tell you about the experience. First of all, maple syrup and maple sugar are amongst the oldest agricultural commodities produced in the United States, according to the Minnesota Extension Service. When the European explorers first arrived on this continent, they found the Native Americans managing maple groves, tapping the trees, gathering the sap, and using maple syrup and maple sugar in their foods. The story goes something like this. A Native American many years ago threw his hatchet at a tree. Noticing the liquid coming out, his wife gathered it in a bowl. She decided to boil some venison in the liquid, and they noticed how sweet the meat tasted. One thing led to another, and the processing of maple syrup was started. 4 species of maples can be used for sap production in Minnesota and also in Michigan, where my son lives. The best tree preferred by most producers is the sugar maple or hard maple. It has the best and sweetest sap. Other maple trees can be used, but they do not produce a superior product. My son uses the sugar maple and prefers this sap for the final project. He has established quite an operation on his property. I wish I could show you some pictures. He has taken an old wood stove he got from one of his neighbors, cut out the top to fit a heavy, flat aluminum pan inserted to be above the flame. He built an extension on the back of the stove with brick and metal and made a smokestack at that end. He uses the metal pan on top of the stove and another on top of the extension so that both pans are directly over the flames. He has an old furnace blower installed to fan the flames through the damper, which produces exceptionally hot heat. Insulation is used in all the cracks and crevices to keep any heat from escaping. The sap is placed in both pans to begin the process. You keep adding sap to the pan on the stove to heat it, and as the second pan reduces down from constant boiling, you add hot sap from the first pan to the second pan. Since the average sugar concentration of sap is 2% sugar, according to the Minnesota Extension Service, it takes over 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of maple syrup. How to get the sap from the trees takes time and effort, plus some ingenuity and imagination. I am not sure where my son gets his talent for making things, but not from me, that is for sure. Here is what he does to get the sap. He drills into the tree, pointing upward slightly, with a 7/16-inch bit, which is used for standard spouts. He then inserts a collection spout made from plastic nowadays, to each hole. They used to be made out of wood. The sap then runs down through a tube into a bucket. However, this is very time-consuming to keep watching and emptying all those buckets. So for many of the trees, he runs plastic tubing from the spout to a plastic tub near the stove. Right now, he has plastic lines running from one tree to another, so it looks like a maze of green lines on the property ending up at a large barrel. When the sap is really running, he can fill the containers very quickly. Sap runs the best when the nights get below freezing and it warms up during the day. Once the buds start to form on the trees, though, A discoloration of sap takes place, and the quality is not as good for making syrup. This is when the process stops. You have to have a good supply of wood for burning because it takes a lot of it to boil the sap. As the sap boils, it begins to take on the brown coloring so characteristic of maple syrup. My son has a hydrometer close by to check the sugar content of the liquid. One also removes some of the discolored foam from the liquid as it boils. Remember, you have to add sap to the stove pan constantly, which means you need a good supply of sap when you begin the boiling process. As the sap boils and boils, it evaporates and becomes concentrated with the sugar content. Once the sap gets close to finishing, more and more hydrometer checks are taken. One has to be very careful at this point not to scorch the syrup, or you could lose the whole batch. Once it is nearly finished, you take the boiled sap, filter it into a container, and take it to a stove or camp stove inside the house or garage and boil the liquid to finish it. It is very important to take a reading on the hydrometer often, otherwise it could get overcooked. You will notice in the filter, this time, a large quantity of what is called sugar sand. It is undesirable to have any of this sugar sand in the finished product. You want the syrup to be clear. Once it is ready, you need a number of sanitized canning jars, lids, and covers ready to preserve the sweet-tasting liquid for storage and later use. It is necessary to have the liquid at more than 185 degrees when you are filling the jars to preserve the maple syrup and to make the jars seal. The next step is to invite people over to enjoy the finished product. You can use the syrup on pancakes, waffles, and of course, ice cream. There are also an abundance of recipes available for using maple syrup. I learned a lot about the process of making maple syrup. It was hard work, yet very enjoyable to come up with a nice finished product. It was great spending time with my son doing this project. It also led me to check on the industry in our own state. In Minnesota, there are a number of maple syrup producers. One of the largest producers is located near Lutzen, Minnesota. There is also a Minnesota Maple Syrup Producers Association with many members throughout the state. They sponsor festivals, meetings, and information for the general public. They also assist people involved in the production, processing, and marketing of maple syrup produced in the state. Some of their finished products can be seen at the Minnesota State Fair. Now here is Jan, a sweet person, with a story of her own.
For Pete's sake, Jim. Well, one of the things I did while Jim was gone, on my way home from Roseau that day, I turned west at Greenbush and followed Highway 11 to Carlstead and Highway 59, where I could travel north to Hallock, where I was able to attend the presentation by Lorna Landvik, the author, and that was very enjoyable. But traveling between Greenbush and Carlstead, I came across Peelin, the little settlement of Peelin. And they do have some pioneer-type buildings at that site. It might be an interesting place to visit sometime. You know, Peelin has quite a history. We don't hear about it much anymore, but it was very important in years past for our pioneers. I'm going to read an article that was written by Milt Sather about the Olson Stagecoach Line and the halfway house at Peelin. In the 1880s, traffic across what is now Kitson and Roseau counties followed the Sandridge Trails. These trails had been used for centuries by hunters, trappers, and various Indian tribes, including the Chippewa, Sioux, and Cree, as they ventured from the more open lands of the Red River Valley to the pine forests of the Lake of the Woods region. Beginning in about 1889, mail was brought to Roseau by stagecoach twice a week from Hallock, with stops at Two River Crossing, which was at Peelin, also Greenbush and Badger. By 1892, the route had changed. Beginning at Stephen, the stage made stops in England, Fur, Nelson Park, Peelin, Greenbush, Badger, Fox, and Roseau. My, it must have taken them a long time just to make all those stops. Within 3 years, both mail and passengers were carried by stagecoach every day of the week on the 75-mile route. By the mid-1890s, the stage line and hotel, known as the Halfway House, because it was halfway between the beginning and the ending destination, were purchased by Andrew Olson. Peelin was now the hub of all stage travel from Stephen to Roseau. Every morning, passengers would board the coaches parked at Peelin, one coach heading west to Stephen and the other east to Roseau. Each would arrive at their destinations approximately at 1 p.m. After a change of horses, passengers would again board the coach, arriving back at Peelin about 8 in the evening, where passengers would spend the night and leave early the following morning. The fare from Stephen to Roseau of $5 included not only the transportation, but supper, bed, and breakfast at the Halfway House. The top speed of the Bronco horses was 8 miles an hour. Jim Riley of Badger drove the Roseau stage for 4 consecutive years, winter and summer, without missing a day. Gradually, the stagecoach travel was replaced by the iron horse. The railroads bypassed Peelin, but that's another story. So Peelin was definitely a heyday in those early days before the turn of the century. I know that one of the paintings by Marvin Espy is the stagecoach between Stephen and Roseau, and that's a very interesting painting to see. Wouldn't it have been exciting to ride those stages in those days? Imagine the dust. That's all for today. Bye.
The Root Cellar with Jim and Jan Stranley is a production of Pioneer 90.1. You can hear it Monday nights at 6:30 on the Kathy Erickson Show, and Wednesday mornings with Ben at 7:30 a.m.